Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for April 16th, 2010.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
Oftentimes, our minds will fill in details that aren't really present.
It's now been some 60 years I've been cracking the knuckles of my left hand at least twice a day, but never those on the right. I have not got the slightest sign of arthritis in either hand.
The group of people that had near-death experiences had also significantly raised levels of carbon dioxide.
This is the first animal that is able to live without oxygen that has been ever found on our planet.
This week, we've got some stories from the weirder side of science for you. Suzanne Bard investigates a modern mythological beast, and Karina Wu spoke to a doctor who spent over 60 years as his own guinea pig to find out whether cracking your knuckles really causes arthritis. Also, we'll tell you about a new scientific explanation for near-death experiences. But first, Suzanne says scientists have discovered the first known animals that can live without oxygen.
Biologists used to think that multicellular life could only survive in the presence of oxygen. But now scientists from the Polytechnic University of Marche in Italy report that they've discovered tiny animals living in a completely oxygen-free environment deep in the Mediterranean Sea. Ecologist Antonio Puscetu led the study.
Our discovery, in principle, is important for several reasons. The first one is that this is the first animal that is able to live without oxygen that has been ever found on our planet. They are very small organisms, not more than a few tens of micrometers. It's quite difficult to describe, but they look like some flowers or very small squids.
He adds that creatures like this may have been plentiful hundreds of millions of years ago when the oceans contained very little oxygen. He says the discovery changes how we view the potential for life on other planets.
The take-home message from this very important discovery is that life can exist wherever, even in absence of oxygen. So we could expect that life could arrange itself and survive everywhere in the universe.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Next, we've got several new episodes of our series, Reality Check, where we investigate paranormal claims, weird phenomena, and science folklore. People who undergo near-death experiences often describe seeing their lives passing before them or feeling a deep sense of peace.
People see a review of their life. People feel peacefulness, they feel joy. Very common is entering into the dark tunnel and seeing bright light at the end of this tunnel.
But researchers at the University of Maribor in Slovenia have identified a possible physiological explanation. Dr. Zalika Klemek-Kedis and her colleagues found that among patients who had suffered cardiac arrest and were resuscitated, those who had near-death experiences had higher levels of carbon dioxide in their blood.
The group of people that had near-death experiences had also significantly raised levels of carbon dioxide in comparison to the group of people that did not have near-death experiences. These results indicate that carbon dioxide may play a role in near-death experiences.
She says high-altitude climbers often describe similar experiences and also have elevated levels of CO2, so it's possible that the gas could be responsible for both phenomena.
These people also experienced some kind of near-death-like experiences, like some kind of hallucinations and seeing a dark tunnel, seeing bright light at the end of it and so on. So we thought that this might be one of the explanations. And the other explanation is that during the resuscitation, if there are raised levels of carbon dioxide, this might simply indicate that there is better blood flow through the brain. And maybe that is the reason that these patients after the resuscitation have better memory on the experience that might happen during the resuscitation.
For our next reality check, Karina Wu answers a listener's question.
In addition to annoying everyone around you, can cracking your knuckles give you arthritis? That's what Courtney Sladek and her classmates at Shaler Area High School in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania wanted to know. The foremost expert on this topic is Donald Unger, an allergist in Thousand Oaks, California, who began a knuckle-cracking experiment on his own hands as a teenager.
It's now been some 60 years I've been cracking the knuckles on my left hand at least twice a day, but never those on the right. I have not got the slightest sign of arthritis in either hand. So I can say, at least as far as I am concerned, there is absolutely no evidence that cracking my knuckles caused me to get arthritis.
Granted, Unger's study had just one subject, himself. But a couple of other studies have looked at knuckle cracking in larger numbers of people. For example, doctors at Mount Carmel Mercy Hospital in Detroit examined 300 patients, both longtime knuckle crackers and non-knuckle crackers, and found no evidence that the habit led to more cases of arthritis. The knuckle crackers did, however, suffer from more hand swelling and lower grip strength. Unger acknowledges that although his results apply mostly to himself, it's the only controlled experiment he knows that addresses the question.
As far as I personally am concerned, I've done it for 60 years. I have not developed the arthritis. If anybody else wants to do it for 60 years, they're welcome to it.
Unger's study was awarded the Ig Nobel Prize for Medicine last year by the Improbable Research Society for an achievement that first makes people laugh and then makes them think.
Thanks for that report, Karina. Glad to have one less thing to worry about. And now for our final reality check this week, Suzanne Bard has another story that might make you laugh and then think. She looked into the legend of the chupacabra.
Listener Andrew Toller of Thetford Center, Vermont, asked whether there's any truth to the chupacabra or goat sucker, a legendary beast that's reported to suck the blood of livestock.
The chupacabra is sort of the Hispanic version of Bigfoot, is what it's been called. Chupacabra in Spanish means goat sucker because it allegedly sucks goats. That is, it vampirically drains its victims of blood, and goats are said to be its favorite prey, although it's said to also attack everything from cattle to innocent kittens to geese, livestock, things like that. It has a very strong vampiric element to it, which is one of the reasons I was most interested in it.
That's Ben Radford, managing editor of Skeptical Inquirer magazine. He says unlike most mythological beasts, this one has a surprisingly modern origin.
The chupacabra story really only dates back to 1995, which is interesting in and of itself. If you look at other alleged monsters and creatures, such as the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, things like that, many of these supposed animals have a long history, sometimes dating back decades or centuries. So in many ways, it's a very, very modern monster, which makes it all the more intriguing to my mind, because, of course, real animals don't just appear out of nowhere.
Radford says an eyewitness in Puerto Rico named Madeline Tolentino first reported seeing a chupacabra in 1995, the same year a sci-fi horror film called Species came out.
It's very interesting if you look at the creature in that film and you look at the original descriptions of the chupacabra, they're virtually identical. And plus, the eyewitness admitted that she'd seen the film. If you look at her original account, she claims that she saw a creature that was about 4 to 5 feet tall, had sort of either dark or black wraparound eyes, almost like you would see in depictions of aliens in films, for example. Had long, thin arms and legs, three toes on each foot and three fingers on each hand. And it also had a very distinctive row of spikes down the back. And this, of course, resembles no known creature. The main eyewitness saw a sci-fi horror movie and somehow in her mind attributed the characteristics of something she saw in a film to real life.
Psychologists call this kind of mental mashup a confabulation.
There are many ways in which a person can attribute something they saw in a fictional context to a real event, and this has actually happened many times before. There are cases where people who claim that extraterrestrials have abducted them and done experiments on them. Many times people have done research and found out that, in fact, their descriptions of the aliens came from pop culture. They came from movies. They came from TV shows. And we don't always remember to experience things 100% correctly. Sometimes we get pretty close, but errors creep into our perceptions and our recollections. And if a person sees something that they consider to be odd or unusual, just sort of out of the corner of their eye or in darkness, oftentimes our minds will fill in details that aren't really present.
Radford adds that alleged chupacabra carcasses have turned out to be dogs and coyotes that lost their hair from sarcoptic mange. That's a condition that gives them a scary, supernatural look. As to the dead livestock, he says there's no evidence that blood was actually sucked from them. Radford has a book coming out later this year that examines the chupacabra phenomenon from a variety of angles.
Thanks, Suzanne. And if there's a weird phenomenon or science legend that you want us to investigate, or if you just have a burning question about science, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update coffee mug. You can also send an email with your question to scienceupdate@scienceupdate.com. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we'll tell you how a songbird's genes help it learn to sing. And we'll have a story about an amazing relationship between hummingbirds and flowers in the Caribbean. Until then, you can get a daily dose of science by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.